Welcome to Saturday morning, day 41 of our 49 days. Just a few days to go. Eek. So we'll start today with some regulating breath, just deep six in, six out. So just nice deep. Even breaths, about six heartbeats in, six heartbeats out. If you're feeling up to it, then you can shift it towards maybe eight or nine just to really stretch things out. Because we really want to have a sense of volume with the eight. So let's just do that. Inhale deeply. And then kind of loosely play with the muscles that you're learning with, to play with the tortoise breathing. But just take your time. Keep inhaling. And it's like trying to fill up every corner of an egg. And then as you exhale, the egg just gradually gets smaller. So nice and slow and thorough. Inhale everywhere. Play with the front, the bottom, the back, sides, the top, corner here, little corner over there. And then breathe out. Let the whole shape of it get smaller. So I could probably spend the rest of my life playing with that because there's always a feeling of a slightly new place within the cobwebs of your rib cage, within the habits of wanting you to have your six-pack abs or whatever, holding your diaphragm and muscles differently. So just the expansion and the stretching out of every possible, again, corner of the egg is a really, really good start. And again, it's also going to help you develop those muscles we're trying to develop, because with those kind of really deep exploratory breaths, you're really going to develop a balance between the contracting part of the muscles to breathe and then the ones that have to relax enough to make the room. So that's an endless, beautiful, fun game. Just FYI. As we keep playing with the breathing into the egg and allowing it to be a sense of volume and space within the space of your body, that's when we want to get into playing with the yolk. And try not to decide where it's supposed to be because it might always be in a slightly different place. So it's kind of like waking up and wondering, where's the cat? You're breathing in, going, where's the yolk today? Is it more the front or the back, higher or lower? It's usually always going to feel kind of in the middle of your belly somewhere. But give yourself permission to not know, because the idea of taking energy centers and trying to turn them into a place with a thing, with a color, with a crystal, with an animal, with the there's not much energetic sensitivity when there's always energetic lists of things to do. So if we're going to play with the yolk a little bit, let's just keep breathing in all the way through the egg. And as you exhale, just bring your attention to where the yolk feels like it is and see if we can make it feel as if it's always there and always just almost like a battery, just becoming a little bit more yolky, a little bit more yellow, a little bit larger. It doesn't matter the quality. It matters that there's a feeling of constant attention and a willingness to just feel more resourceful and more adaptable, more aliveness. Try not to make it a thing in your head. Okay, just keep breathing all the way in. Where's the yolk? So exhale. Can I really just narrow that attention in there? There's that yolkiness. It takes a while. And if you want to just turn this off and go and do that for the rest of the day, good plan. Next thing we're gonna become aware of is that what we're actually training in a lot of these exercises is a fine, very refined kind of awareness. And in Qigong practice, Taoism, Chinese medicine, we call that yi. And it's a very fine tipping point between I'm paying attention to what I see and then I'm applying my intention to what I want to see. So when we're doing the egg and yolk breath, a lot of our attention is on just how we feel the egg, how we feel the yolk. Where is the yolk? Where is Waldo? That's all about attention, curiosity, and seeking, reaching. Intention is when we start actually taking the breath and nudging new corners and new places to feel and to experience. And our intention to actually see the yolk more, I wouldn't say like a microscope, but just with more detail, high res comes to mind. So that simple yolk and egg practice can help you fundamentally experience and refine the distinction between I'm really aware with intention and I'm really aware with where intention is now, but just a little bit nower. Because you can't have a really living present intention that goes past like the next step you take. And it's all about presence, right? So that's actually a lot. And I don't really think there's anything else to say for the rest of my life now. That's covered it all. Okay, cool. The other side of the coin that I'm hoping to bring your intention and attention to is that sometimes your attention has an intention of its own. Yeah, that was fun. Pretend my glasses suddenly had little zombies painted on them, and everywhere I looked, I saw zombies. So my attention is like, I'm just paying attention, but something has triggered my attention to think of, where's my machete? Because now my intention is about zombies. That was a weird example. But the point of this is that we're all conditioned in a sense of being an animal. We're all conditioned in a sense by being a social animal. We're all conditioned through competition and games of hierarchy and collaboration. And we're also conditioned in the ways that we actually protect ourselves. So we're going to learn a lot about that. And I'm hoping that you're all feeling really into your keyboards today, because we're going to want to do this a bit interactively. Excuse me. I scratch my nose. And this practice is actually based on something called voice dialoguing. And we all have voices in our head. On average, about 70-75% of the time when people are just in the space of not being interactive, we often just default to an inner conversation or dialogue. And sometimes that dialogue has a flavor or a culture or an agenda, a chip on its shoulder or something that changes fundamentally the voice in your head. And there's a couple of PhD clinicians in Australia about 20 years ago, they invented this process called voice dialoguing, and they actually just gave it to the world instead of trying to, make a ton of money, which inspired me a little bit. And I'm going to walk you through how it works. And part of it's going to be somatic, so we're going to want to be a little bit goofy and rehearsing things and imitating things. Part of it's obviously with voice dialogue and cognitive, so we're going to want to have to play with our words. So as I work through each of these, I'll be asking questions. And when I'm asking those questions, I'm asking you to respond as that voice in your head, which is why typing works. And this is one of my favorite things to do with people clinically, because it's like sort of improv comedy. But so each of the first mind voices we're going to learn is based on an instinctual structure or instinctual capacity. So one thing we're going to learn about is your lizard brain, your reptile brain. And I talk to that often because it's pretty important. And I give that one the nickname Larry. Excuse me, if you don't like Larry, I actually did this once in the clinical setting with a guy named Larry, or his brother was named Larry, and it was just confusing the situation. So pick the name that works for you, lizard brain. And then we're going to want to pick a name for someone. I say Mary the monkey. And that's going to be for your limbic associative social belonging brain, which is a survival instinct. And then there's this part of us that's very consistently aware that we need to resource ourselves at a distance from people. And that becomes Pete the porcupine. And again, they're your animals. Make up your own animals and voices. And then there's another part of us that I call Jack, and Jack's a jackrabbit. And he's kind of like this opportunistic part of the mind that sometimes gets into the existential mind and sometimes gets really caught up in controlling the social world. So we're going to play with Jack a bit. So find yourself or yourselves and good posture. And hopefully not too far away from your keyboard if you want to play along. So let's just hang out with our lizard brain for a minute, right at the base of your skull. You know, it likes to bite, arr, likes to fight if it has to, likes to eat. Arr. It's that real grr and purr brain. And we're going to imagine it as kind of a lizard. So it wants to move that way. It's that impulsive, that strong. And it really centers itself around your tailbone because it's got that tail almost as big as the rest of it. And it's all about your spine and your eyes and what's called your mandible. And this is actually a really cool practice to move your mind and your body, and especially your head and face with your teeth instead of just with your eyes. So that's a pretty fun game, and we'll come back to that. So just in your chair in your living room, hope no one can see me here. I'm going to move around like I'm Larry the Lizard a little bit just to feel that stuff and see what comes to mind. So the question we want to ask ourselves is, in the modern world, what's Larry's job? And in the voice dialoguing practice, we usually ask the person or the people that we're working with to say, who am I talking to? So I'm going to ask you all to say, who am I talking to? And if you want to say Larry, that's good, or you can just put a nickname in there. And I actually have no idea what the time lag is between when I ask a question and when people hear the question and when they might type in. So this might not work out at all. Maybe there's just those little buttons people can hit with a little floaty things. I'm not sure how it works. So I can't see any typing, so this is probably not going to work. The point of this, though, if it doesn't work with the typing, is to actually ask yourself, what's Larry's job in your life right now? So what I usually bring to my mind is kind of a gas station attendant of, this is how much I have to do today, and this is how much fuel I have in my instinctual gas tank. And for me, when my Larry takes over, it's when I put way too many things on the to-do list, and really my sense of aliveness and vitality, right? So yeah, as Bonnie said, Larry's here to protect us. But the thing we want to become sensitive to is when the things we want to have done and the ability to do them starts to go down. What Larry actually does is he hits a big red button of adrenaline, because that's basically Larry's job, is fight or flight, you know, and a few other things, maybe even freeze. But Larry's a badass, so he doesn't like to freeze. So if there's a part of you right now that's constantly almost like a gas station attendant, energy accountant, red button smashing instinct driving yourself, the real question is, can you start to talk to Larry? Hey, Larry, Saturday morning, what's the deal? You know, maybe ask yourself, do I need that double espresso? Because Larry's already hitting this button like, you know, he's a drummer. And when that starts to become your first response to feeling stressed out, oh, yeah. Hey, Larry, you're really kind of freaking out here. You've taken over the steering wheel of my mind and my body. And I think you're going to crash this because you're overreacting. So in the voice dialoguing practice, the fundamental thing that you actually do is you start by saying, thanks, Larry, good job. Or, Larry, I love you. You're such a, you know, freak about this whole, you know, energy balance thing, and I really don't have a choice but to hang out with you. So let's work this out. So when you say, thanks, Larry, good job, keep in mind how it feels to need to do that job, because it's a survival thing. And when you actually find gratitude for that instinctual place within yourself, and it could be head to toe, there's a sudden humility, kind of forgiveness, and a kind of openness to maybe I should really shift things. So by saying, thanks, Larry, good job, I've totally way overmaxed my schedule today, right? I'm going to move this to tomorrow and this to next week, and I'll probably never sign up for that again. And keep thanking Larry for doing such a good job, and then try and negotiate. Say, okay, Larry, what I'm going to do is this much today and that much tomorrow, and I'm going to have maybe a matcha instead of a double espresso, and a smoothie instead of, I don't know, a muffin, whatever. But now you're in a place of sensitive negotiation. It's the same way of like dealing with a child who's having a tantrum. And if you're sitting there yanking on your child's arm in a shopping mall and they're winning, I mean, that's, there's some pretty cool physics there, but that's not a very healthy relationship with how to move through life. So that's an opportunity to go into a kind of right relationship with something that's like 60% of your foundational instinctual drive. So thanks, Larry. Really good job that you've gotten us here since we were primates, and good job you got me through all the stuff I've been through, and really great job that I showed up every day so far for the 49 days, because yeah, sometimes you do and I just roll over and make an excuse, but no, I'm going to show up. So that's Larry, and welcome to the most important relationship you may ever have, you know, at least in the short term. So thanks, Larry, good job. And then there's Mary the monkey. And you can pick boy, girl, or something in the middle. Names are up to you. But Mary the monkey's instinct is primarily social and about bonding. And she's famous up here for producing a lot of really fun gossip. If anyone was to write a good Harlequin romance, it would be Mary the monkey, because it's all about the feels, all about the people. It's all about whether or not we fit in, but in the sense of how we think and talk and maybe what we do with our face sometimes, is, you know, that's a huge part of being human. So the same thing is to just ask yourself, well, I would be asking you therapeutically, who am I talking to? And take a moment to become your version of Mary. And notice the sudden social paranoia. Or at least the sudden social awareness of who's around me, the radar just suddenly becomes very poignantly about people. It's incredible, isn't it? When you go like, oh yeah, hey Mary, how's it going? Right. So in your own experience, what's Mary's job? What's Mary's foibles? Where does she spend a lot of time that doesn't help? What kind of internal dialogue is she writing about you and your friends and your lover or lovers or past lovers or hopefully future lovers or whatever you're doing with all that? That's Mary's job. And both her and Larry are a little bit crazy because they're running on instinct. They're not running on deep contemplation. And that's probably one of the best parts of meditation, especially if you're meditation includes the occasional bit of voice dialoguing, because before you even sit down to meditate, you can go, okay, Larry, we're good. We've made our little deal for the day. Set. Nice. Good job. Go back to taking care of things. And same thing. Okay. Good job, Mary. I'm going to go into a solo reflective contemplative place right now. So just going to ask you to maybe put the typewriter away and just hang out in the tree and enjoy being a, you know, a happy monkey. So if I was to do again with you in a more therapeutic way, we would actually have a conversation and you would pretend to be Mary the monkey. You know, what's on your mind today, Mary? You know, what's the most likely way you're going to get some grooming today? And when you start to think about grooming, you're naturally bringing your attention to your belly, to that whole interactive, intuitive part of your mind. And sometimes it's the intuitive belly kind of radar that tells you that you're really socially uncomfortable. And that gets Mary going. And she starts typing. And maybe she gives you a good idea. And maybe she just makes you want to hide into a corner feeling like a gross monkey covered in, leaves and twigs and bugs, because maybe you don't believe you deserve grooming. And she'll let you know that that's how she feels, because that's what she'll say. So thanks, Mary. It's a really, really amazing thing you're doing for my life. Yeah, Mary's got a lot of opinions, and she's really, really good at trying to control social connection and cohesion. So here's a weird experiment, and I'm going to just put this out there. So we've just spent 41 days, most of you listening to me sit here in my little chair, yap about all these cool ideas, and I'm a person and I have a personality and I can be a bit of an ass. So here's a question. And please feel to respond if you want to. Have I said anything that's actually hurt you, hurt your feelings, made you walk away and feel socially less in some way because I said something that was about you being wrong or weak or bad? And I totally hope that that's not true. But if it is, my point isn't about that. My point is, did you notice how easy it was for me to say that really vulnerable thing? Because that's the way we get to meet Mary, is to have the humility that right relationship is about one question away. Right? So if right relationship with Mary is one question away, start there. Hey Mary, thanks a lot. Good job. Just checking in to make sure that you and I are kind of still homies with, how we roll in the world. And I totally get that we need a little bit more or a bit less of this kind of connection. Right? So, whatever Mary has to say, don't be a jerk. Thanks, Mary. Good job. I'm going to listen to what you have to type in the middle of the night while I'm trying to go to sleep, because that's probably my best source of guidance on how to be in the world. And again, she likes to sit here. I guess you can't really see, but right around your belly, all the warm, fuzzy things happen down there. But right above Mary, right across the top of your diaphragm, excuse me, sleeps a little friend of ours called Pete the Porcupine. Hi, Pete. Pete's job basically is to keep us with a sense of integrity. And his primary reflex is to decide whether or not we've had too much social stress, social engagement, other people's needs. And the primary instinct that Larry or Pete brings into being is emotional distance. Excuse me. Men in midlife are really good at this, because we have to have our man cave and we have to have our personal time. And I'm not putting that down. I think that's true for everybody. It's just a bit of a social joke. So when we're looking at the opportunity we have with the voice dialoguing and we are feeling a little bit prickly, Pete the Porcupine's prickles, just slow down and go, okay, hi, Pete. Thanks a lot for making sure I have the emotional space to recover my resourcefulness, my actual capacity to communicate with Mary. Because Mary and Larry are pretty much running the show. So when Pete shows up, you can just ask yourself, okay, who's the one that I'm talking to? It's Pete the Porcupine. My job is to make sure you have enough time away from people to not be an even more pokey person. And sometimes we forget about that because we identify with the thing that makes my life work is being pokey or being at a distance or controlling other people's expectations of affection or something like that. And that's an instinct. So don't, you don't want to, well, try and spank Pete. Anyway, just respect that, hey, that's a really important job. Thanks, Pete. I really am aware that maybe I should have a spa day or something. Or go for a walk or spend some time in nature alone or with a big dog just in case you live where I do. But, you can actually just go, yeah, okay. Most important thing, I think, is if you're working with people consciously in your life and someone comes up and really needs to talk to you, you can say, sorry, I'm working with Pete the Porcupine right now and I really don't have a comfortable sense that I can interact with you well. So if you're okay with it, I'll get a hold of you maybe tomorrow. And maybe that'll become a social thing. We can get little t-shirts, you know. Sorry, me and Pete are doing our stuff, so, you know, fuck off. But if you can thank Pete, you can now feel Pete. And if you can feel Pete, you can usually feel more vulnerably, especially if you feel in with Larry and Mary, what you're really tired of and what you're really burned out about and or what's really pissed you off or hurt you. And then you can find a more contemplative way to find that right relationship by asking probably the person who you're holding Pete up against and just be able to go, yeah, so are we okay? Did I get a little bit pokey there when I didn't have time for you? And that's actually what relieves trauma. Right? So don't feel bad about Pete. Just find that as a really great avenue for a really good, right relationship, authentic connection and communication. Because, I mean, how many people have heard of NVP or NVC, nonviolent communication, right? So we've had decades of people trying to help us understand how to be less of a jerk around Pete. Because, yeah, Pete's all about boundaries. But he's also about overreacting to boundaries when people don't seem to know they're there, when we don't have a diagram of our castle and moat. You know, people just trip over Pete a lot. So the last one, and there's many, many ways to do this. Maybe I'll come back to you. Last one for today would be Jack the Jackrabbit. And this is a tough one. We are all opportunists or else we're in a coma. And opportunist does not need to mean a bad person or a hurtful person or a manipulative person or a tricky person or an underhead person or half of the dictionary of words that describe people when they're being shitty. But we're all capable of all that stuff because Jack has an idea. He likes to gamble a lot. He's kind of a bit of a gambling addict. And make some short-term decisions to see if it was worth it. Because that's what an opportunist does. And sometimes Jack is trying to get some really latent childhood needs met. So it's really complex as to what's really going on and why. But until you can say, hey, Jack, what's that all about? You know, you're not going to get any deeper than I feel compelled to cheat on my husband. I feel compelled to spend that money on some video game console. I feel like there's just this stirring, unsettled drive within us to see what's around the next corner. So that's Jack. So if I was to ask, and I thought this was way more interactive, sorry. If I was to ask Jack what Jack's job is in life, I would really love to hear all of your answers, but we're almost at 30 minutes and it seems to take a long time to do kind of question answer stuff, which is cool. Just want to encourage you to just sit down with Jack and say, hey, Jack, just want to talk to you about your job and about how it goes. And maybe we could work on some breathwork and meditation together, just to be a little bit more clear and coherent about the fun experiments and gambling that we do. Because if anyone creates a lot of consequences, it's Jack. Yeah, Jack's about as impulsive as the word impulsive could possibly mean. And sometimes compulsive and compelled, sometimes overreacting to things that happened when you were between 2 and 4 years old, because that's just how it works. And here's the last thing to consider, because it's a bit funny. This is a little pond right here, and this is where Larry lives and swims around. This is a tree where Mary lives, and Pete the Porcupine kind of hangs around outside of the pond in the tree, and then Jack's wherever the hell Jack wants to be, because Jack can do anything. He's kind of like a shaman. The reason why this is meant to be a useful image is if Larry's having a really hard day because you're stressed out, Larry's going to start biting at Mary's tail. And Mary's going to start typing a lot more gossip about, oh my God, what the hell's wrong with me because I feel like I'm going to die. Or if I don't get my needs met, something really bad's going to happen. when Larry and Mary are fighting, I don't know if you know this, but monkeys will actually crap into their hands and throw the crap into the mouth of, you know, other monkeys. Or, yeah, it's going to be okay. You know, or at anyone else. And Larry hates the taste of monkey shit. It's been a million years of monkey crap in the mouth. So take a moment and recognize that sometimes the right relationship on the inside starts with Larry and Mary. And when Mary starts throwing a lot of poop around, that's when Pete is just like going, okay, the social environment is literally full of crap and I'm out of here. And when all of this stuff gets really going, Jack naturally goes, I think everyone's distracted. And off he goes, hopping around to make shit up and play with the world. And yes, I'm more or less making this up, in the sense that you could pick any animal to identify with any part of your personality and ego structure so that you can go deeper with your meditation when you can't shut up enough in your meditation to meditate that way. And that's actually normal. So if you're wanting to meditate and your mind is kind of doing a lot of typing, thank the one who's typing. Thank the reasons for them to feel so compelled to stir things up in the way that they do. So thanks, Larry. Good job. You've gotten all of us this far. And thanks, Mary. Good job. We actually give a shit enough about how we roll in the world to do a 49-day rite of passage on how to be yourself from the inside out. Because I think that's what Mary's probably wanted the whole time. To be met. Like met. Capital M, met. Thanks, Pete. Pretty amazing that you can every once in a while make sure that I don't completely buy into take care of everyone all of the time more than me. Because that doesn't work. Some people need more Pete. It's hard to say thanks, Jack. But thanks, Jack. Really glad to know that I am that compulsive, that insecure, that manipulative, that impatient, that make the list of all the things that we can be when we are kind of gambling with things because we're that unconscious. So keep breathing into your egg. Keep feeling your yolk. And I know this is a bit long in the teeth, but I just want to add one more thing. When you're doing the breath with the egg and the yolk, we're trying to balance the experience of what attention can do and what intention can do. When we go into our tortoise breathing, there's an intermediate practice that's a double breath where we inhale, fill the belly with the yolk, exhale, and settle, and feel that that yolk is concentrating a bit. And then when we inhale, we want to inhale that sense of the yolk, a kind of liquid light, into the sacrum and then up into the spine and then through your eyes. Now, for the next week, we're going to get into a lot of detail about that or how that works, because that by itself is a bit dangerous. But what I'm hoping to bring to your attention, is that you have to be very subtle with attention and intention when you're playing with internal energetics. Because as soon as you start to force it, who's the one making that decision? Right? When we're moving that sense of light up your spine, it's actually really slow. Like it can take 15, 20 seconds to gradually migrate up your spine. So it isn't a rocket ship. It isn't as fast as, you know, you want it to be. It's actually as fast as it is. And I've seen people who, with respect to cerebral spinal fluid flow, it really only goes with any sense of movement about a quarter of the way up their spine. It takes weeks of work to open the spine up to where that light actually by itself finds its way. So you cannot use intention with this practice safely. However, you can use attention with a little bit of a direction to move energy around your body. So just making sure that that caveat is there, because you're only going to get the truth by feeling for the truth. Otherwise, it's Jack painting all kinds of funny pictures around the inside of your spine, making you feel good about yourself. So that gets dangerous. Use your attention 99% of the time. Use your intention about 1% of the time as you work with the yolk going into your sacrum and spine, coming up into your mind, because that's where people can go literally crazy. So it's all about attent, not about intent. All right, blah, blah, blah. Enough about all this stuff. Have a great weekend. Tomorrow evening, 6 p.m., we're going to get into a couple of subtle things, especially because it's our last week to go really into some subtle things. So have a great day. Go and enjoy a hopefully not too freaky breakfast for Larry and the rest of the crew. See you tomorrow night, or see you Monday morning.